Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Tulips in Tuscany podcast. We're your hosts, Steffi,
Paige,
and Sarah.
And we're on a mission to share your stories and provide some awesome resources for families touring Holland.
We are three moms to some pretty incredible kiddos, and we're excited that you're here to navigate this unexpected journey with us through beautiful Holland.
Hi guys, I hope everyone is having a great week so far. We're glad to have you back tuning into our Tulips podcast. Tonight we have a special guest that you won't want to miss. She's an inclusion expert and advocate for those who are differently abled, Dr. Rebecca Dyer. Before we start, we have a quick word from our sponsor.
Hey everyone, we're so excited that we have our guest speaker, Dr. Rebecca Dyer. She is going to be chatting today about inclusion. We know a lot of you have children who are differently abled and lots of questions about how to best advocate for your kiddos. So we hope that we can answer all those questions for you today. So Dr. Dyer, is that the best way to call you, Dr. Dyer?
Sure, that sounds fine.
I'm used to calling you Professor Dyer because you were actually my professor at GCU. And I think you were also my mentor teacher during my student teaching for my special education courses. So that's kind of cool to be reconnecting now to talk about inclusion.
For sure.
I'd love to start by just having you share a little bit of your background and what inspired you to become an advocate for inclusion.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you guys so much for having me. I think it's been a journey, and I can just reflecting and thinking back, I can tell God's just, it's something he's been building kind of for a while. And it's interesting to look back and see. It definitely started with my very first teaching job. I was super excited to start a self-contained classroom at an elementary school. They never had that program there before, but I soon discovered we were different on campus. We got a classroom totally on the other side of the campus from the rest of the classrooms. We were not next to any students. We were right off the cafeteria in a very random room. And then my students weren't initially welcomed in other classrooms, so I had to really advocate to get them to go to specials, even to start going on field trips, participating in other things, rather than just always being in their room. Initially, they even wanted us to have our own lunch period, and I was like, no, we'd really like to go to lunch with everyone else. So it kind of started with that. And then a few years down the road, I was a children's pastor for a short time at a small church, and I had a mom come to me. She knew I had a background in special education, and she had a son with autism, and she was going through some other things in her life. And she said, I haven't been to church in years because I don't feel like I can leave my son in a children's program in a church and just go to the regular service. So I told her we would figure it out, and we did. And she was able to be ministered to, and so was her son. And that's inspiring me. And I feel I just have a really hard time understanding why people are excluded, because we're all created in his image. And it's very difficult for me to understand why someone wouldn't be included.
That's very important to us too, that we attend church. We're faith-based in our family as well. And being able to see my son be included is honestly one of the biggest concerns for me about bringing him close to what we believe and wanting him to be raised in that way. I don't see how we can do that without the village around us.
Right.
Right now, our church is kind of in the process of growing. We actually helped start the church, but Joshua is right now with his age group, he is the only one with a disability, but he is like everyone's highlight of their day seeing him at church right now. I would love for him to have some peers and maybe start some programs at church down the road. And I'm very curious to see what kind of suggestions you have in mind, because right now he's
definitely
kind of the lone star, but everyone at church loves him, and it's fun to see them get to interact with him there.
That's awesome.
To kind of transition into talking about the importance of inclusion and what exactly does that look like to you?
Yeah, this is pretty interesting and timely. We just had a big event at GCU, Disability Awareness Week, and I was doing a lot of research and preparation for the event. I'd already named it, and we'd already planned it to be called that. I've been doing a lot of research about awareness versus acceptance, and those are kind of some words that people are, you know, we're looking at, well, wait a second, are we promoting awareness or more acceptance? I really feel like the word acceptance is more true of inclusion, because we're looking at not just I'm aware of you, but I know what's different about you, not just, oh, I'm aware of it. Like, I want to get to know it on a personal level. So I feel like that promotes inclusion. What are the individual's challenges? What are they? And how can I support anyone that has those challenges? Because we all have them. So I think that word is much better fit for inclusion. I really like it.
Yeah, I love that. I saw this thing going around. It was a quote, and I wish I knew who shared it, but it said, it just talked about how we need to start teaching other people how to interact with people with disabilities rather than teaching people with disabilities how to interact with the world. And I think that's so fitting, because so many people are just, they're timid or they're scared, or they don't necessarily know how to treat them. When in reality, it's like, just treat them like you would anybody else.
Exactly.
They just want to be accepted, exactly what you just said. So I think that's a perfect definition.
I think it's so important too, because I want to be able to be around my family and our friends and then have them also understand that while Tristan is different, I want them to be really good advocates for including him just in regular play with the cousins, which they've been fantastic with. And we've really been around a great support system. But as we want to expand that support system to our friends, I kind of struggle with figuring out what is the right thing to do and the right thing to say and how to get that process really moving. Do you have any tips about that?
I do. And I think lack of like a better term, I would say bring out your mama bear, because we all know as moms, if anything to do with our kids, mama bear is going to come out. Not in a, you know, aggressive way. Obviously you don't want to be aggressive about it. A lot of times, you know, the lack of support for inclusion is fear of the unknown. They don't know because it's different. They don't want to make you uncomfortable and ask questions. So you can start the dialogue and say, you know, what questions do you have? How can I help you understand more? When a situation happens with your family and they don't know how to react, say, this is kind of how I've learned to react. I don't know if it's right, but it's what I'm going with. And, you know, make it a learning experience for your whole family, so that they know you're not there. You're not judging them for being afraid. That's super important, because I think people feel bad when they don't know what to say or what to do. Be like, no, that's totally okay, because this is different. But let me help you, because I'm learning too. So let's just do it together.
And for siblings, I have a 1-year-old who is just absolutely obsessed with his big brother, Tristan, who has Down syndrome.
Right.
And I'm trying to show them how to play nicely together right now, and how Tristan may not always want to play with a toy. I can already see it happening. Tristan does not want to play with a toy in the way that Ezra's playing with the toy. And then Ezra gets frustrated and then just walks away, and he's one. So of course, you know, a 1-year-old is not going to have the patience to hang around for anything. But what's your advice for siblings?
I think definitely the same thing, being open to conversations, and with the kind of situation you described, maybe modeling, you know, like maybe this is a way we can interact, but at the same time, you want to give them a choice. And like that situation, that's going to happen with any siblings. I feel like they're not always going to be on the same page. They are different. And you really want to just teach them patience with each other. You know, why are they reacting differently than I expected? Well, because they think differently than me, and that's okay. If you just keep that conversation going and model that. So if you're having that type of interaction with your son too, model, you know, how you would want his brother to respond, and they'll see that and they'll catch on.
Yes, he's definitely catching on already, I think, because when they're having a hard interaction or a tough interaction where they're just not seeing eye to eye, they always see eye to eye on wrestling. So
<of course.
laughs> one of them will take the other one down, and then they'll just start laughing, and then everything is fine again.
I love it. That's boys. And I have a 15 and 18 year old, and they do the same thing still.
I love it.
Yeah.
So I also have a 4-month-old and big brother Joshua, who is just turned 3. And so I'm excited for that relationship, like yours, Paige, for them to kind of grow and get to play together. And I'm curious if you have any books or resources or even like TV shows or anything that you would recommend for either party. Like, so either my 3-year-old or or also sibling to kind of chat and like learn a little bit about disability even or inclusion or anything like that.
I do have a list of books. I don't have it in front of me, but and I don't know if they're specific to siblings. So I could do some digging though. I know Johnny and Friends, I don't know if you've heard of them. They have some resources for siblings too, but I can definitely do some digging.
Okay. What is that called? Johnny and Friends?
Johnny and Friends. Yeah. Okay. You haven't heard about Johnny and Friends? I'll
look into it. I don't think I have.
I've done a lot of stuff with them. You guys, they do stuff with disability ministry. I could talk about it all day. They do this retreat, which I was going to talk about somewhere. They do a retreat for camp families that have kids with disabilities. And we go up north and like, there's a become short-term missionaries that stay with your kids. And they do stuff for all the moms, stuff for the dads, stuff for both.
Do they have a website?
Oh yeah.
Is it on a website?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. If you go to Johnny Friends Arizona specifically,
is this local to just Arizona?
It's international. There's an Arizona location, I guess. Yeah. But it's international. Okay. They do wheels across the world. They donate wheelchairs and take them across the world. I went to like Argentina and China with them to train on disability ministry, do cool stuff.
So that brings me to my next question. What are some ways we can promote inclusion in our communities?
I would say first, like for the community, we really need to just be advocates and increase the representation of people with disabilities across all areas. We need to see if our people with disabilities being employed in different businesses. Are they being represented even in leadership, maybe in political roles? And I've seen an increase in like books and movies. But making sure those things are accurate representations and then having a voice if we feel like it's not. I think just anywhere we're going, you know, sometimes I had a parent share with me once, you know, like sometimes other kids will look at her son and kind of look at him because they knew he was different and just stare. And the mom would say, stop staring. And she said, I really would prefer you just come up and ask us questions about, you know, just ask me about my son and we would be happy to talk to you about it. If you're just going to they stop staring, you're teaching them to just avoid. So while we're out in the community, let's just continue to embrace each other's differences. I want to learn about everything that's different. We need to teach our kids that at a young age.
That's very true. And I guess I've never really thought about it like that, but that's kind of your natural instinct is if your child is staring at someone to say, don't do that, like you're being rude, but it's totally teaching them to just avoid and don't make eye contact or interact with them.
Right.
There's a really good quote from, I can't remember the company right now. There's a really good quote and it's called Just Say Hello. And it's on a shirt. And I want to wear that everywhere we go because I feel like a lot of people can't always put their finger on what exactly is going on with Tristan because I just think he is so darn handsome with that big full head of hair. And he's got these big brown eyes and they just can't quite figure out, is he a mixed race child? Is he special needs? What special needs, if any? Mm-hmm. And so they'll say hi after he says hi, because if he decides to say hi, which is not very often, but if he decides to say hi when we're out in public, he will not let you not say hi back. He will stare you down and keep saying hi. And so then people will obviously, most people will come up and respond accordingly and say hi, and then we'll start chatting. But in the event that someone's just staring and then they tell their kid don't stare at him because they're not sure either and they feel awkward. In that scenario, I want to just shout across the room, just come say hello. I'm so friendly. It's fine. It really is.
I feel like out in public, we can't even go out in public anymore now without somebody coming up to Joshua, which I think is great. But we go out and anytime people are staring, that's my new thing is I'll look at Joshua and say, Joshua, can you say hi? And I'll have him kind of almost start and he'll wave to them or he'll do his little growl, which is his new hello. He'll be like, at random strangers, but I think it makes their day. And then they're like, oh, okay, hi. So that's some great advice for the community. What about in the schools? And that is an ever-evolving situation.
Yes, it is. And it's so interesting because there's still a push against it and for inclusion, but there's research behind it, the benefits. And what I love about it, and I try to shut down arguments pretty quickly, research says there's benefits not just for kiddos with disabilities, for all the students. students, all of them notice that they're in different classrooms, and that just sets a social tone that isn't necessary. But when they can all be together and value the differences, and there's research that shows that the kiddos with disabilities have increased academic skills, and a lot of times it helps with their communication and social skills, right? Especially with my kiddos, when I taught in self-contained, it was my 10 students. And if we all hung out with each other for 8 hours a day, we only had the opportunity to learn from each other socially. It's so much better to expand that. And then your general education students, they get to see differences and value differences. And I did sometimes take my self-contained kiddos into a gen ed class, and they got so excited every time we came. They developed the best friendships, and they were so supportive. I just hate for kids to miss out on that and be so limited. So that's one that just, it's right there in the research. And I know there's going to be barriers, but we have to just break them down one at a time. And a lot of times that's just people's attitude or perspective. Maybe they've never experienced it, so they're, again, kind of afraid of the unknown. We have to show them all the benefits, and it's across the board beneficial. So,
absolutely. And that just benefits everybody, having them in the classroom, because just talking about being out in the community, now when they go out in the community, they'll say, oh, I had a student like that in my classroom, and
right,
I know exactly how to go talk to them. But when they're segregated like that, it's going to make it more awkward and uncomfortable. And again, promoting that don't stare, don't make eye contact, just keep moving along mentality. So I think it benefits not just the child with the disability, but every student. Now, I'm curious, why is it that there's still so much pushback? Is it finances, or what's the reasoning behind that? Possibly, it could
be, because a lot of times for inclusion models, we want to have two teachers. Well, we know there's never enough funding in education, and especially here in Arizona, we have a teacher shortage. So what school is going to put two teachers in a classroom when they can usually only find one if they're lucky? So that's definitely part of it. I think part of it, and I'm not going to, you know, just put everyone in the same lump here and say they all have the same attitude. Sometimes for a general education teacher, it sounds like a lot of work, right? That's overwhelming. I already have all these things I have to do, and now you want me to really modify what I'm teaching because now I have even more different abilities in my classroom. But like when I work with future teachers, I try to show them, like, just use these great strategies and meet these students where they're at and let them be creative, and you can do it. You can meet all those different ability levels, and it's going to pay off and be beneficial. So
what are some things that other parents have shared with you about inclusion?
I've talked to a lot of parents, and some of the stories have been really hard. It's interesting because actually I had a totally different idea for my dissertation. So I ended up interviewing parents about their experience when they take the kiddo who has a disability to church. What are you experiencing? And I did interviews with them through Zoom. And in multiple instances, we were both just crying because there was really, really hard stories. I had one family that was probably the most difficult. It was back east. They used to live back east. And as their son was getting older and his behaviors were getting more difficult, he couldn't really progress into the older grade classrooms yet. So he was kind of in this limbo. And they actually got a letter from the church saying, we really can't have you bring your child anymore. We don't really know how to support him. We don't have a place for him. They ended up moving to Arizona, found a beautiful church where they have everything they need. But a lot of the parents talked about it impacts their marriage. Some of them would, like with church, would have to get a sitter just to come to church, or take turns going to church so someone could stay home. It could lead to, you know, the dad in that particular situation impacted his faith because he was so frustrated with the situation. He's like, I don't know how I feel about God now because, you know, look what you guys are doing to my kids. So it is hard. And you know, as moms, you guys know when somebody celebrates your kid, we know our kids are fabulous. And so when someone else sees that and celebrates that with you, it impacts the parents in so many ways. And one of the things I was going to talk about was those retreats, and it's an opportunity. The parents always say, like, we've never gone on a vacation with our kid because it's really stressful. This is our first vacation, or this is the first time me and my husband have been alone because someone who is trained and able to take my child for this day can do it. It's just really, and I don't know what it's like day to day for them, but I try so hard to really understand their perspective and put myself in their shoes. What does it feel like to have those different things in your life? And it impacts them a lot. Parenting's hard. And then parenting a kid with a disability, it's hard too. And we have to understand that and support them.
That makes me want to try to figure out a retreat now for all of our mamas.
Do it.
Absolutely. Self-care is so important for parents and marriages. And I know the statistics. So to backtrack a little bit, when Tristan was born, there was a huge conference here in Orlando at the Moors, and we were gifted tickets to go to this conference. And I wasn't sure if we wanted to go, but Gabe said, hey, you know, Gabe's my husband. He said, hey, let's go for an hour or two. It'll be our first time away from him. Right. And so we went and we just had such an amazing time soaking up all this information. And I was really happy to hear about the statistics about how marriages go through seasons. Mm-hmm. But when you have a child with special needs, it literally makes or breaks you. Yeah. And the marriages can be strengthened so much by this. And so we just decided right then and there, okay, we're gonna make sure that we're one of those statistics where it strengthens us because we really like what we've got going and we made a beautiful baby. Like, I want to keep this going. And so we've been really intentional about that. But I know that's not always the case. A lot of parents don't have the support to be able to prioritize their marriages. So that's something that I definitely have a passion for, encouraging moms to take care of themselves and their marriages. So it's really reassuring to hear that from you as well.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
And I'll say Jordan and I have definitely had our hard moments. Absolutely. But I think similar, we didn't go to a conference, but we kind of had to have that conversation and just decide we want to travel still and we're going to figure out how to make it work. We want to be able to go to church. We're going to figure out how to make it work. We want to do all these things and we're just going to have to figure it out. And so we've kind of adapted and figured things out as we go. And it's not always easy, but we have tried to make that effort still for the sake of our family and for the sake of our marriage. But I will say having a big support system here at home has been huge. My parents take all my training. I train them like, I'm saying like, do this, this is how you got to talk to him. You got to redirect him. You got to do this. You got to do that. And bless their souls. They take it with a grain of salt and they do their best to implement it. And Joshy absolutely loves hanging out with them and spending time with them. And they've been our saving grace just for date nights and everything else. And I am very blessed because I know that not everybody gets to have that situation. Right. So
yes, same here. My mom is an ESC teacher in the high school system here. And while I was pregnant with Tristan, her first student with Down syndrome was in her class, her first student ever in America. She's been a teacher for years and years and years. While I was pregnant, going through this crazy pregnancy and getting the diagnosis in the midst of that, he was born in January. So she'd already had him for a semester and she just poured her heart out for this guy. And now we actually know him because we live in the same like town. Orlando's big, but not that big. Right. So we know him. We know his parents. I've met his parents. His mom and I run into each other a couple of times at our local Target. And so I've been able to say hi to her and get to know her. And it was just such an incredible experience that God was able to put her in my mom's path and her son at that time. And it opened up my mom's mind to inclusion, not by mistake at all, divine intervention. So my mom was able to focus on inclusion and really supporting him in the school system, which I just thought was so cool. Cause now she's so fired up about like, and so proud of him.
Yeah, that's awesome.
We talked about inclusion in schools and we've talked about inclusion in community. And we've talked a little bit about wanting to be able to bring them into the churches and things like that. Mm-hmm. What kind of suggestions do you have for say a church to be able to provide resources for whether it's, training or bringing somebody in or having some sort of program available? You know, churches often are volunteer based.
Right. I think, what conversations I've had with churches that currently have disability ministry programs, it was interesting as I talked to different directors, all of their programs started organically. Like they just built it as the kids came. And all of a sudden there was more kids and they're like, we need a program for you. And there's definitely organizations that provide training and lots of resources for how to do it. At our church in particular, it's super small. We have one or two kids in our program, but those parents have been so thankful that, you know, we have that program for their kids. And we have volunteers. So that's tricky sometimes, making sure you can have consistent volunteers. And we did a super basic training on, you know, here's kind of what disability is, here's some strategies, but then we also have people like myself who can like step in if things get beyond maybe what they feel like they can handle, which so far we haven't had anything like that. So I think if a church or any organization in the community wants to start something, start small and start with what you know, and you will learn kind of based on who comes to you, which is really cool. We rely a lot on the parents, you know, if we have a new kiddo come, we rely on them and say, you know, tell us everything about your kiddo. What are some things we should avoid? What are some things they really like? And we just get to know them and kind of build a program around them. And it works out really well.
You're inspiring me to start this at my church now, because Josh being the one, right now, I think he's the only one. There might be another kiddo there, I think, who has an autism diagnosis that's similar age, but I think that would be me having a training background as well for kids with special needs. I think that would be a good idea. Now I'm going to go to church.
Yeah.
I'm inspired too, because I don't think we have one of those programs at our church either, actually. And one of my friends from one of my old Bible studies, she is in the children's ministry right now. So it would be a great contact point for me to talk to her about what we can do, because we have such a large community here. I mean, just from the local, we have two nonprofits here locally. So I know there's a large community. We don't have just one. We have two nonprofits just for Down syndrome, That's Down syndrome. So I think it would be a great idea to do it here too. I'm really fired up to do this. Thank you so much.
That's awesome. I'm curious too. So whenever I brought Joshua to his very first IEP, I created this about me page for him.
I love
Pinterest,
it.
Pinterest mom. I created this about me page and I put all his strengths. I put the things that he's working on. I put the best ways to work with him. I put some of his interests. So I kind of included this, like, how to become Joshua's best friend, basically.
Right.
The more I'm thinking, I'm like, churches and communities would benefit so much from having parents almost have something like this on them to just be able to give to churches, even so that no matter what volunteer is in there, they can quickly just read through it and be like, oh, this is how I can interact with this kiddo and come on their level and be their best friend.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. One of the moms, she came, just her and her husband, not just her, but her and her husband came to the church the first time without their son, just to check it out. And then they took pictures. They took pictures of the room, you know, the building, the different people. So then they went home and showed him. So we were familiar when he came, and it worked out great. He comes all the time.
That's a great idea.
When Tristan was little and we were taking him in because he had so many allergies and what have you, I had a little flip chart of these are his snacks in here. It was just like on a little key ring, which I don't even know where it ended up. It's been 4 years since then and another baby. So who knows where that is, but that was really helpful for everybody to just kind of see, like, he takes a long time to take his low muscle tone. He takes a long time to take his bottle. Don't be alarmed, because someone would start feeding him and they would inevitably freak out because he's not drinking it and it's spilling everywhere.
Right.
And so that was something we would say, don't worry about feeding him a bottle. Just come get us or something like that. So those little one pagers or like the little ring thing.
Super smart. Yeah.
What is that called? I feel like I need to figure out what that is.
Like, they put note cards on. I don't know what they're
called. There's a word for it out there, I'm sure.
We're going to jump into our Q&A segment. So we posted a question sticker on our Instagram where our followers could ask any questions that they have for you. So our first question is, are there any organizations you recommend for inclusion in the communities?
Yes, I have some of my favorites and I try not to like have too many. TASH is one, T-A-S-H. They just stuck with their acronym because their full name is kind of antiquated, but they have amazing resources. Respectability is another website I like a lot. Inclusionmatters.org. Those are probably my three favorite. And then recently, this isn't like an organization, but I thought it was cool. It's called Uncomfortable Revolution. And they sell like clothing and accessories, and it all says stuff about inclusion. I'm like have it up because I want to order stuff from them. So those are kind of my top choices.
That's awesome.
So the question I have says, my son's school wants to keep him in a secluded classroom. At times I feel this could be the best setting for him right now, but I also want him to be included. How can I make small strides for inclusion for him at school?
That's a really great question. And I would say definitely make sure you're familiar with the law IDEA, Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. Find out as much as you can about it and ask questions, because something that kind of gets skipped is, and it's actually mandated in the law, that in every IEP, you have to at least discuss inclusion. It doesn't mean you have to pick it for the least restrictive environment, but it's always supposed to be part of the conversation, and it ends up getting skipped because everybody in the team will say, oh, well, we know that's not an option. That won't work. So we'll just skip to something else. But legally, it is supposed to be part of the conversation. So always bring that up. Feel free to refer to the law, because no one can really argue with the law. But at the same time, you know, I always tell people, if there's something that you want, make sure you have suggestions. So make sure you learn about your school. What would be some opportunities for inclusion? But like my students could go to the specials, or is there a club or extracurricular activity they could start with, and then see how that goes and then build from there. And as they start doing different things in inclusion, I always encourage parents to, and I tell my future teachers this, that collect data on it, so that if anyone wants to say, oh, that inclusion thing didn't really work, the parent can say, well, actually, based on my data, their communication skills have increased, or they just talked more about how they really enjoy that activity and they enjoy school more, whatever it is. Make sure as a parent, you keep some of that information on your own, so you can really be an informed part of that conversation, and just take a bite at a time and keep adding to it as appropriate for your son.
That's great advice.
That's excellent advice. I know a lot of parents get really intimidated when they're told, and I've been in this position as well. We just had an IEP meeting yesterday. It feels like a lifetime ago because it was so emotionally draining, but just saying, oh, well, he'll end up in a self-contained classroom. And I understand that sometimes that would be appropriate if this was 2 years ago where he wasn't able right. to feed himself. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. He would need to be in a classroom like that because he would need so much support. But mm-hmm. at this point, I feel like it's not necessary for us to have him in that situation.
Right.
And I know that's a question that I was able to advocate for and really speak up about, because he is currently included in his private pre-K and it's nice. Going amazing for him. We just got an amazing report about it, about how he won the most pom-poms they were giving out for each time he was caught being kind or following directions or being a good friend. And that's incredible. My child with a right. disability that's 4 that just got diagnosed with autism is getting rewarded with recognition like that in a fully included classroom where he's the awesome. Only one with that kind of diagnosis. Right. And I was just beaming with pride, and it really came at an opportune moment for me because we just had this horrible IEP meeting yesterday.
Right.
So it was just really affirmation for me that inclusion works and it is so mm-hmm. important, and keep fighting for it.
Yes, I agree.
And I'm going to end with this last question. What would be some advice for parents that want to push for more inclusion in school when the school is giving them pushback? What kind of advice would you have for parents?
Yeah, I would definitely say, you know, don't be aggressive about it, but come in prepared, right? Like I said, refer to the law, give specific examples. So if you have examples of where your child has been successful in an inclusion setting, bring those examples. If it's not a school setting, maybe talk about a group, a community group they participate in, or a church group they participate in. And again, without being aggressive, don't allow them to just shelf the conversation. If they want to say, we don't feel like inclusion is important or appropriate, why? Make sure they have data to show why. You should be able to enforce the law and say, well, then I want to try it. And if we're trying it for a month, then that's what we're doing, but we're going to do it. And I'm going to collect data as a parent, and you're going to collect data, and then we're going to come back together. An IEP can be, you can do an addendum to it at any time. It's not stuck for that whole year. So say that, hey guys, I really want to try this for this month. And I agree that we will come back and review, but I want to see what's going to happen.
Great advice.
Awesome. That has all been amazing advice. Thank you so much for your time and your expertise. I really enjoyed this conversation, and I hope everyone listening did as well. That's a wrap, guys. Thank you for joining us, and thank you, Dr. Rebecca. Wasn't she great? As always, if you guys are interested in supporting Tulips, there's a few ways to get involved. First, you can support us by heading to your shop and checking out our merchandise. We love seeing you guys rocking your Tulips merch, and we've got some really fun stuff coming up. Second, if you're loving Tulips, you can become an official Tulips patron by becoming a monthly subscriber on Patreon and earning patron-only perks. Lastly, you can help us spread the word about Tulips. If you think you or someone you love would be a great fit for a Tulips takeover or a guest host on the podcast, please be sure to fill out the contact form on our website.
Woohoo! Thank you so much for joining us.